Welcome, Pinto and Sean Bean patrons. Welcome to Extra Beans.
Welcome to Extra Beans.
Hello.
Hello. We've made it, people. We've made it to the end of Sept.
And what a Sept it's been, eh?
What a Sept it's been. It has been pretty good, hasn't it? We've done the live shows. Yeah. my Beefcake journey's happened.
I went to the cinema once.
To see?
A collection of short films that had all been nominated for Best Short Film at the Welsh BAFTAs.
Really? Oof. That's rather high end. I need to enhance my culture of altering. I need to enhance my cultural soakage.
Or just don't and lean into being a
sort of provincial slob.
Being a provincial slob.
I did see Bridget Christie's show. That was excellent.
Was that in Exeter?
Well, she did come to it. I ended up seeing it in Plymouth for reasons that are too boring to mention. So what's the key? So there's engage more culturally. There's lean into slob. Is there a way where I could sort of pretend that I've engaged more culturally and sort of cheat it?
This is good.
While being a slob.
Yeah.
That's what I'd be really interested in.
It's going to be a stretch for me. I'm just going to stretch for me to help you. I'm just going to try and put myself in a situation where I'm not genuinely fascinated
across the very latest.
And across the full cultural space. So it's going to take me a while to... I don't know if I can actually do it, Mike. I should imagine what it would be like to pretend to be more interested in cinema or fine art than one actually is. I went to see
Operation Mincemeat in the theatre. That was cultural. And in front of me was a man who... It was classic London seats, tiny Victorian seats for children size.
Knees around your ears.
Yeah. And basically I was in a position where if I moved a millimetre, my knee was in the back of the neck of the man in front of me. And occasionally he would sort of lean back and his neck would hit my knee. It's a really weird feeling of putting your knee in someone's neck.
It's not recommended. We're expected to appreciate and enjoy theatrical experiences while essentially being in a body pose where it's almost like you feel like you're in a body pose which you'd be in if you were trying to insert yourself into one of those siege catapults to be thrown. you're kind of crunched over. Yeah.
Or a pre-interrogation stress position.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. But I want to say the show was really good. I did have a great time despite having my knee in the back of a man's neck. And that is the test of a good production.
Yeah.
So I've been quite cultural. I feel quite cultural.
Yeah, it's quite good. You've had a proper old fix.
Anyway, here we are.
Here we are.
Yeah.
Extra bits.
Extra beans. You listeners, you're very much culture vultures, aren't you? Because you subscribe to the Extra Beans. I mean, that's like getting a novel and reading the introduction.
Yeah, that's very much crossing the T's culturally, isn't it? Dotting the I's.
You're reading the
preface by Melvin Bragg, aren't you?
Yeah. That's like going to see a Shakespeare play at the Royal Shakespeare Company and at the interval not leaving to spend the next hour in Sweet's Kingdom.
So, what was the first one we did? Ah, yes, okay. So, how can we pun our way into this one?
By the way, has anyone got time for an extra round?
Oh,
okay.
Of ice cold lukewarm beer-nter.
Served at room temperature.
I don't know what's going on exactly, but Ben's just got a sort of beatific smile on his face. Whereas Mike, you've gone very, very pixelated.
Yeah, Mike. I don't know what's going on. So just to explain to the listener, we're using new software for the new series. And Mike looks like, you know those old photographs where Stalin has like photoshopped out a bloke.
I think it looks like they've colorized Stalin.
Yes.
It's a new documentary on BBC Four where it's never been colorized before footage of Stalin.
Well, the budget didn't quite run to it, though.
And
color in 4 pixels.
And also, based on the clothes, it's Stalin very much downtime.
He's down on the farm, isn't he?
Yeah, he's down on his private farm that he hasn't told anyone about.
Yeah. It also looks a bit like a computer game from the mid 90s where. Yes. It's called something like Stalin is your leader. And you've popped up in between, you know, in like a sort of cutscene.
It's one of the cutscenes.
Yeah.
You must crush the Bulgarians.
Teach them how to smite intellectuals. Yeah. Mike, I think it's because we're using this new system that's, I think it's taxing your...
It's really taxing
your internet connection.
It?
And you're still on dial-up, aren't you, Mike?
Yeah, why is that's the absolute latest, isn't it? What's the... don't understand the question.
I'm sort of getting nostalgia for Mike looking at it.
He looks like the watermark on a banknote.
He does, in an Eastern European country, where it's quite difficult for you to calculate the exchange rate every time you just need to buy some crisps or whatever. And you're staring at the note.
8 million Woznars, what's this?
8 million Woznars, all I'm getting is a box of Tic Tacs. I'm taxing my data usage every time I Google this. Is it safer just to spend the eight billion Woznar by the Tic Tac? I don't know what to do.
And by the time you finish having that discussion, the price has doubled.
We are actually rolling out, aren't we, for the Patreons, the Woznar currency. So all of your payments in the future will be in Woznar. It's not going to help us because, as Mike alludes to, the inflation in Woznistria.
It's a bit like that New Order album where it costs them more Woznar to print a Woznar than the Woznars actually were. Because...
Well, each one is made out of calfskin vellum parchment, you see.
Drawn by hand.
It's gilded.
By Dr. Woznar himself. Also, because inflation is so quick there, each Woznar has to have a sort of pop-up effect, doesn't it, where you can wheel out, you can sort of extend it and add zeros as you go along.
So we're just going to have to live with this new sort of hologram version of Woz. Mike, I'm going to send you an image so you can get a sense of what's going on here. So,
Oh, yes, I see what you mean. When it's just a freeze frame still, it looks like it should have... some birth and death dates on it as well. Really, that's too close
that's
together.
That's why I'm getting nostalgic. It's very nostalgic of mine.
It's giving me, I tell you what it's giving me, Gaddafi son on the run.
Yes, that's true. Yeah.
All they know is he's hiding somewhere with very poor Wi-Fi. They can't narrow it down more than that.
It's a very dictator son. It's not the Playboy son, because there's always a Playboy son. It's the really sinister one, who you sense would probably be worse than Gaddafi if you ever actually got bad.
Who is the head of the Halmut or something like that?
He went into the secret police and he went, we need to really shake this place up. It's way too nice. We need to really... Yeah, let's get serious here, people.
We need more chambers, guys. Yeah,
tighter, hotter, and more chambers. That's what we need.
Guys, how many anti-chambers are there coming off the chambers? There aren't enough. Chambers aren't enough. I need anti-chambers.
Pre-chambers, post-chambers.
And sub-dungeons.
He looks like Stalin having a great time there, doesn't he? It's hard to believe the amount of millions he did.
Well, if you've got zero empathy,
that's true.
You can,
actually, really
enjoy yourself, can't you? Regardless of what's going on,
he looks like Stalin has just been introduced to some rabbits. You know the way every dictator has a soft spot.
Mm. And I think he'd be making a very complicated allegory using the rabbits. So he'd go, this little one, this is Georgia. Look at it with his little white tail. But this is Poland.
Honestly, Joseph, if you could just try and enjoy something for what it is. They're just rabbits. Just enjoy them as rabbits, Joseph. Come on, please. We brought you to this farm to relax. You know, he also reminds me of when I worked in animation in the late 90s. I can't remember if I've talked about this on the podcast or not, but I worked...
Your Glasgow phase.
My Glasgow phase. I worked for a digital animation company. It was the early days of this stuff. It was called Digital Animations.
Mm-hmm.
I think digital animation had been taken, so it was the second. Digital animation.
It was Digital's Animation.
Digital's Animations.
And you were working for Pixar's, weren't you?
Yeah, so we did quite stilted animation. We did those sequences in video games. We also...
Can you remember any specific ones you did?
No, because I think I wasn't good enough to go on those. It was I wasn't desperately good at animation. Well, it wasn't the right fit for me. It wasn't the right fit.
See, were you doing more like the kind of thing that comes up when you do a strike in a bowling alley?
Yeah. Yeah, fun explosions, we call them. Yeah, I would do a little fun explosion. I tell you what I spent most of the time doing, and this really does give you a sense of what was going on at the time in terms of technology and where we were at. So it was early tech bubble. There was a lot of tech companies, still fairly early internet. So I remember what I spent most of my time doing was I would go on the internet, get all the different reports from the Arsenal games over the weekend. So in the Independent, the Guardian, the Times, it was pre-paywall for the Times. Get them all, print them out.
All right.
Using I think it was a dot matrix printer we had in the office. So again, it's internet printing technology was ubiquitous, you know, by then. quick and efficient. No one was keeping track of it.
Well, the ultimate goal of the internet at that time was that it would all be printed off at some point, wasn't it?
Well, the great printing. That was what was going to happen in the year 2000, wasn't it? That's what it was all aiming towards. Way behind.
And we've fallen
printing.
Far and behind.
It's getting harder and harder every year.
The stack of box files they got ready to receive the internet is still there, I think, somewhere in Cleethorpes.
But I would print them all out. So I'd print out all the reports, then I'd go and sit in the toilet. And read them. I lock myself in the toilet and read them.
It's like an early iPad. Really.
Well, I was certainly swiping something up and down. I didn't mean that to sound. I mean left and right.
I thought you meant you were wiping your ass with
most reports you disapproved of.
And we do lose that with the modern internet, don't we? It's very hard to wipe your ass on the internet.
Screen protectors, Ben. It's all about screen protectors. As I print off the match reports, I then fold them up. Well, no, to get them into the toilet, I'd have to fold them up.
Into the toilet?
No, I'd fold them. I'd fold them. I had to do a little sort of equation, which is how many times can you fold a piece of paper before when it's in your trousers, it'll suggest that you might be carrying loads of printouts into the toilet every day for some reason. But so I'd get them all in, read them, then I'd maybe have a little nap. And
then it's lunchtime.
Then it's lunch. I once had a nap that was too deep. This is my early professional career, so this is throughout the late 90s, early noughties. I became a real master of sleeping in toilets.
Yeah, you're off the starting blocks. You want it. You're hungry.
Exactly. Time doesn't wait for anyone. You know what I mean? You've got to go for it. The tech bubble isn't going to last forever. You need to maximise now. But I, at one point, I remember I was in the toilet, and I think because I used to sometimes you could use the toilet roll as a pillow. In theory, very much okay. In theory, though.
So
guys.
If it was too replete, it would be too comfortable. Is that the problem?
I think that
if it was a fresh roll.
That might be the problem. But I remember once I fell into a fairly deep sleep, and I woke up with a jolt, and I'd slightly fallen off it. Someone went, "Are you all right?" And I never did it again after that. That was a warning. I think I slightly damaged the toilet seat as well. Anyway. But no, my point is...
Henry, you could write a book about your early experiences in the tech boom.
I think. I know. A sort of reverse self-help book. One of the things we did was we did the animation for an avatar character that went on ATMs, cash machines, on a screen to show you how to use them. Does this ring a bell or not?
No.
No.
Did it have a name, this avatar?
Well, we tried to... One of the things we tried to work on... Because early tech bubble, no one knew exactly where things were heading. Mm-hmm. So people were speculating. And one of the ideas they had was like animated newsreaders.
Right.
We invented an animated newsreader character called Ananova, who was going to read the news. But there was no clear advantage in that over a newsreader. But it was just that period where people were investing in crazy ideas and everyone...
So hang on, this was to replace a real newsreader on television?
Yeah, but the idea was you could write the news on a computer and sort of feed it through digitally to Ananova.
And she'd know what to do with it
because we had programmers and scientists and people working out the mouth shapes and stuff would kind of move automatically.
So instead of getting one quite experienced journalist...
Exactly.
You have a team of 26 people with no interest in the news whatsoever, yeah. Scientists and animators.
We've created a perpetual Moira Stewart.
And anyway, so there is, you could write the news, and she would just kind of say it, and her mouth would, but her head would bob about. We had people, literally, bobbers. Their job was to calculate random head bobs that would feel normal. But you know, you're very hard to actually make something feel real. Also, if you're just going for reality, why not use a real one who actually knows the news?
Because they can join a union, Henry. And then the whole thing's screwed.
And so you'd write the news in, and she would go, Colonel Gaddafi's son is at loose in England. And, you know, it would make them the sounds and everything. It was basically a terrible idea. It never caught on. It hasn't caught on. So what ended up was this spare newsreader character that had the digital setup to exist, but no major channel, you know, or broadcaster wanted to,
not even Channel 5.
Buy her, not even Channel 5. So we ended up, I think, using her as an ATM instructress.
Because she had a high trust factor, as it was.
I guess that's what it was. But again, a completely pointless thing. But I animated her hand, typing the... So occasionally you'll see this on an ATM or something. There'll be a little digital thing will come on the screen, and there'll be a character with computerized hands pressing the buttons. Again, you could just... A, it's not needed. B, you could have just filmed Moira Stewart doing it. and then the money would come out, and then I animated the hand picking the money and taking it out. But here's what's really weird about it. The other day, I was in Waitrose, and I was putting my thing through, and who came up on the screen? I'm convinced it was my animation of it's still knocking around.
One
of a newsreader.
You're taking the money out, you're doing the swipe or something. It was her, that character. I'm pretty sure, but partly because she's got a very, very distinctive 90s haircut. She's got a kind of Spice Girl, Scary Spice, I think. No, sort of Ginger Spice sort of haircut.
Everyone had a favourite.
With a streak, like a blonde, like a sort of reddish hair with a blonde streak, very, very 90s. And she's got bootcut jeans. I sculpted them myself.
And Henry, tell me, where else do you see Anna Nova? Is she with you now?
She's a bit rude, Mike. She's in the Zoom right now. Come on.
I think Mike's turning into Anna Nova. Henry, when she came up, did you just drop to the floor, start crying and saying, my computer bride, I created you to be perfect.
She's trapped. Well, someone help me. What's wrong? She's just standing there.
My love.
Smashing into it with a jar of olive paste.
Of course, Anna Nova's not the name of the actual newsreader. That's, she's called Anna Nova's Monster, and you are Anna Nova.
Yes, that's right. I'm Anna Nova. Yeah.
I gave her the gift of life. I tried to play God.
You know when you get an orange and it's got 8 segments in it? Yeah. But hang on, there's 2 extra segments sort of hanging on outside the orange, that are only available through a paywall. Because you subscribe to oranges.com. Well, enjoy your extra segments.
One of which has got quite a long bit of pith dangling off it.
Yeah.
It's probably get caught in the back of your throat.
And both of which have sort of dried out because they don't live encased within the moisture-retaining skin of the actual mother orange.
Orange.
Orange, colour of energy and spontaneity.
Mm. Is that true?
I don't know.
Orange is like 70s to me.
Yes, orange is 70s. That's very true. 70s colour. What Wozniak, I imagine, out of the three of us, Mike, that you're the one who's most recently eaten an orange.
I think, that's possible.
Do you know when it was?
Certainly in the last week, I'd say.
I'd say my guess would be that Ben is still pre-orange in his life. I don't.
you're I was not. Say, I think I'm probably month. I mean, maybe 4 months.
I mean, there are oranges. It's not peak orange time, I don't think.
But your basic fruits, the things that you will be taking in, yeah. But Mike, you're very happy tromping your way through an orange or an apple or a banana or a pear. One of the four basic the four sort of page one basic fruits.
Oh yeah.
Henry, does it count if I've basted a ham in marmalade?
Oh, Keep talking.
Well, does that count as eating an orange? Because if so,
I think that's as close as you'll probably ever come. Yeah. I mean, that's how you get your fruit intake, isn't it? It's by basting meat in
basting hardy meats.
Yeah.
In the different fruits.
Yeah, I associate Mike with little fruits. He's always got a little fruit on the go, is Mike. Yeah,
little fruit bat. That's me.
I used to have a sort of theory to do with oranges and lemons, which is I see them as evidence of we don't want to get into the whole is there a God debate.
I'm not sure how you get there from the old orange and lemon springboard.
We dealt with that in series one, episode six, if people are interested, didn't we? We put that to bed.
definitively and finally.
You know, in the maybe there is a divine intelligence column. Oranges and lemons, and to a degree strawberries, certainly watermelons, as evidence that there may be a cosmic intelligence that created Earth.
And Trek the Musical.
And Trek the Musical. Because there is always a dark side with any divinity. There is always an equal and opposite negative force. How could you evolve, like, oranges and lemons? Actually, lemons probably more than oranges. In that it's such a perfectly sort of branded fruit. You look at it, yellow, fresh, zingy, acid. It's exactly the same size as a hand. It's easy to hold. It's got the two knobbles on each end to distinguish it from it.
You got very small hands, or are you just buying very big melons?
I'm talking about lemons. I'm talking about lemons.
Yeah,
I've got normal hands. The lemons, I've got a normal pair of lemon clutches. Look at them. I've got lemon clutches on the end of each arm.
Do you mean it's the perfect size to fit in your hand? It's not the size of a fist, is it, a lemon?
Let's not split hairs. I mean, there's different lemons. I mean, I don't know what you're probably eating organic, proper rural lemons. I don't know. They're probably weird. I don't know what they're like, your lemons. I don't know what size they are.
They're small and gnarled and very dark yellow and pitted. They've got shrew bites in them. Yeah.
Whereas I've got the kind of glossy, super evolved lemon. But for me, do you know what I mean? It's like that. How that wouldn't just happen by evolution, and you'd have oranges. It's such a lovely bit of branding. Oranges and lemons. The orange is a warmer colour. It's round, so it's like a version of a lemon, but without the knobbles. It's orange, which is kind of a more mellow version of yellow, because yellow is a kind of cold, acidic colour. Orange is warmer. It's got some reds in there, which also replicates the taste, which is like a kind of, it's a less acidic taste than the lemon. Do you know what I mean? Like, that wouldn't, how would that just evolve naturally? Like, it's perfect.
So, Henry,
like, if you put the top advertising bods in the world would not come up with something better than lemon and orange.
How do you explain plums?
Well, Mike, there's always the odd disastrous advertising campaign. It happens. You know what I mean? Yeah, plums are a total fuck up. Yeah, there's no credit. I'm not denying that. Someone dropped the ball badly on plums. But,
So I've got an answer to this, I think.
Okay.
But I'm putting myself in a stance where I'm braced for hot bollockings raining down upon me.
Yeah.
Okay.
So you're wearing you're metaphorically wearing the anti bollock visor.
Yeah.
Arm guards, chin protector, and
codpiece.
And of course codpiece, yeah. Okay.
I believe this to be true.
Yeah.
That all citrus fruits that you can imagine are human inventions created by selective breeding, in the same way that we have loads of breeds of dog.
This really feels like a YouTube conspiracy channel with like 190 million followers.
Welcome to the Citrus Files. So I think that there was maybe one or two original ancestors that were just called citrus, and they were sort of like a weird, knobbly, green little thing in the jungle. Yeah.
And the kumquat was engineered in the KGB lab in Siberia
to try and knock the lemon off its perch in one fell swoop.
No, I think that there was a citrus fruit, and then basically what we have as now, the lemon, the lime, they are all things that we've created, basically. In the same way that we've created different kinds of cows, Frisians, belted Galloways, Angus, Jersey.
Citrus. So what we're aiming for, the sort of the final point of this would be, we could actually develop like plum ducks.
And just skip that, the cooking process.
Yeah. Pre-fruited.
Just bung it in the microwave.
Mike, does this sound plausible to you as a neutral onlooker in this discussion?
Which bit? The whole thing is engineered.
Not engineered. Like, what would you call it? selective breeding. It's like we create breeds. Yeah.
There's been selective breeding. I feel like I could believe it with the subsections. I'm happy to believe it about your clementines and your tangerines and your satsumas and all that sort of business. But I think I want to believe that an orange and a lemon were there from the get-go. When I put an orange in my gob, it feels pure. And I don't want to think some curious sort of medieval explorer somewhere retired and started splicing things in southern Spain.
I don't think it was an explorer. I think it would have been the people who lived there anyway.
You think even more ancient?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't want to believe that about the orange, the pure orange.
But do you think they would have sat down then, Ben, with the advertisers of their time and sort of with a picture of a lemon as we recognise it now and gone, this is what we're heading for. This is what we're aiming at. The perfect branded object. It could not be more, it couldn't be more cool. Even now, lemons, I mean, picture it on a Japanese pencil case, looks great.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And orange, it's different. And then apple, different again. And then the one which I think is superb, essentially I'm just ignoring your point, Ben, just blundering on. The one I think is superb in terms of design is watermelon. I mean, that is the green skin.
Watermelon as it, once it's sliced.
Yeah, once sliced. Yeah, pre-sliced, it just looks like a sort of football that's gone off or something, doesn't it?
Mm.
Sort of mouldy football. But once it's sliced, that red, you've got the bright green of the skin, there's a bit of white, then there's a bright red, and then the black pips, and it's perfect. Strawberries is the other one. Strawberries look... that red with the little pips.
I think watermelons look better than they are. They're more of a feast for the eyes than the mouth, I'd say.
Oh, no.
No, you're wrong. You're 2-1. Bean wrong. The bean is wrong. That is, it's in the bean constitution, Ben, isn't it? You are wrong.
Yeah.
Quite nice with feta cheese.
That is a weird...
Get a watermelon, slice it up, barbecue it.
Barbecue or watermelon?
There's nothing left. Yeah. What's that going to leave?
Just a bit of sort of burnt rind, surely.
No. You get slices, you barbecue them, and then crumble feta on, a bit of balsamic vinegar. Or you both look so sceptical.
I don't think you should have to eat fruit with cheese, Ben. And I've talked to you about that in the past.
I'm either basting it on a ham or eating it with cheese. Those are the two options.
Now, I've seen that watermelon with feta thing. To me, that's the evidence, that's the death throes of Western civilization, I think. That just feels like a weird sort of that is the equivalent of a dead frog leg, just sort of jittering,
plugged into the mains.
Yeah, citrus, fresh, clean lemon. It's yellow. It's rounded. Two nobbles. Let's get it out in the market and let's see how it goes. Flying off the shelves. Of course it is. It's perfectly marketed, perfectly designed lemon, and not only that, it's... why would a fruit evolve that isn't even just for eating the whole thing? It's just because it improves things like fish when squished on.
It didn't evolve.
By the way, I'm not saying I believe this, but I'm just saying it's in the column that goes for intelligent design. I don't believe in intelligent design. Why are we talking? Why am I saying this on this podcast?
It is 27 degrees. To be fair,
it's 27 degrees.
Welcome to the Citrus Files.
As far as we understand it, Leonardo da Vinci never painted a lemon. Coincidence?
Can we speak with lemons?
When life gives you lemons, make the truth.
Slicing through the grapefruit of illusion.
They've got blood orange on their hands.
Zest in peace.
The Kumquaterati.
Half-time oranges, full-time mind control.
Oh well, bless my soul, what's wrong with me? I'm itching like a man in a fuzzy tree. My friends say I'm acting wild as a bug. I'm in love. It's extra beans.
Yeah.
So this next bit is stuff from the Elvis episode. And we mainly just slagged off the idea of biopics. And so last night when I got home from the cinema, I turned on my television and I was like, I want to watch something before I go to bed. Just like half an hour, watch something. And I was on iPlayer, and there was a biopic on there of Hank Williams, the country singer.
Oh, yeah.
A movie, a feature-length movie.
Yeah.
And I thought, I'm going to watch it just to see if it's as bad as, like, we were making out. Maybe we were being a bit unfair about biopics. Yeah, yeah. And it's, like, the shittest thing I've ever seen in my life.
and so you already feel vindicated.
They'd cast Tom Hiddleston. Mm. Why? as country music star Hank Williams. There's surely an American.
Can you play the guitar even?
I watched a film recently in which Benedict Cumberbatch played a character who played the banjo. And I read an interview with him where he said that he was, before he'd made it, he said that he was intending to become world class at the banjo.
Right.
Because he wanted to be so at one with the instrument that in the movie it didn't feel like a wrinkle when he picked the banjo up and didn't feel that natural.
Yeah.
And then I read an interview with him afterwards where he said, he tried and it was too hard and he...
Also, there's no point. You just do what they've done in films for forever, since the dawn of cinema, which is someone starts playing the piano and...
And it's Jules Holland's hands.
Exactly. And Elton John's feet on the pedals.
That's what you do. You pan down, even if it's, Lauren Bacall or whatever, you pan down.
That's why there's some extraordinary platform shoes on the pedals.
Yeah. And it'll be Jules Holland's hairy hands going up and down the piano as well, isn't it?
Even for the scenes where Hank Williams was playing the guitar, they would then pan down to Jules Holland's hands playing the piano.
Playing the piano, yeah.
Anyway, here's some more stuff about Elvis.
One thing which happens when you watch a biopic or biopic, there are certain key moments, aren't there, in a band's life, which supposedly are sort of hinge moments, or like really massive.
This is the problem with these films.
Moments where everything changes. Because obviously you don't show the gig after gig after gig. But there are certain mythological moments. With Queen, it was Live Aid, wasn't it? Oh, they were already massive, weren't they, actually? But they were amazing at Live Aid, weren't they?
It was a bit of a comeback moment, I think. They'd become less trendy, and then they sort of came back with
that. Comeback moments are good.
Pete Waterman signed them straight back up again.
That's what happened, yeah. And Brian May took a really clean clinical dump in dressing room 3 at Live Aid in Wembley. Which really made him think that they
made the front page of NME.
Yeah, it really did. It gave him the confidence to really kick on. In any biopic, you've got the key moments are being inspired to be a musician. Sort of, there's normally a montage.
Heartbreaking
childhood scene, which sows the seed for the deathbed scene.
Yeah, and ideally that would be set in the industrial north, if possible.
Yeah, for any band. It doesn't matter where you're from.
Even Elvis Presley. Yep. In the film, he was born in Wigan.
Is this a banjo? You're no son of mine. That sort of thing.
The scene you definitely need in all these films is the one where they take the record to the record company and they go, ha, 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 we'll never sell any of these.
The suits.
Nobody wants to listen to this.
Yeah.
And then the next scene is them going, Billboard number one.
Here's a moment. First gig, or like very bad small gigs. Moment.
Yeah, badly attended first gig.
Or aggressively attended by sort of biker gang, for example.
Yes.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Perhaps a few bottles thrown. Then have to make good their escape out the back.
Yeah.
In a van that won't start very easily.
Childhood sweetheart.
I feel like you're leaving me behind.
Yeah, childhood sweetheart. It's not going to go well for, I don't think. No. Unfortunately, that relationship.
Especially if there's an early bun in the oven.
Yeah.
Oh. Leaving the perfectly good job at the mill.
You'll be back.
You know, I'm going to keep these husks of barley aside and you'll be crushing them come the winter again. That sort of thing, is it?
Yeah. Yeah, very good.
Is this a biopic set in the kind of Revenant era sort of early 1800s America?
Yeah.
That's right, yeah. Having started in the industrial north of England, back in time and place. Yeah.
Becomes a beaver trapper.
But this kid plays it like the old style.
So the big thing in the Elvis one that always happens all the time is scenes of Elvis is singing somewhere off, and then you see people, their ears prick up. Who's that?
And what the heck is he doing with his legs? There's a lot of stuff about the legs. And
all that happens about 5 times is people just turning around and going, what?
Sort of flicking holy water at him.
Yeah. The other thing you get, Ben, is often it's early student gigs. I remember this from the Johnny Cash biopic, and there's a place of campus gigs in America. There'll be big halls full of like students. But the breakthrough moment will be basically the band is trying something a bit different and the audience are suddenly going completely berserk.
Yes.
So they'll be like throwing off their... Sort of taking things out of their hair, letting their hair down.
And ideally one of the suits is in the back of this watching going... Hold on a second.
Yes, exactly, yes.
I can monetize this shit in a sinister way. And then often there'll be things like, also young girls will be, their fathers will be sort of covering their ears and eyes, won't they?
Don't look at that, Marianne. What that man's doing with his legs is Satan's work. You think he's actually got Satan's legs?
Henry, did you write the Elvis movie? Because this is uncanny.
Which means somewhere there's Satan's upper half going around with human legs. That gig will be even more dangerous.
You were cut out of production, though, weren't you, Henry? Because you wanted it to stop halfway through Elvis's death and then move into the Porth Call era as the main.
That's right.
Yeah.
But also, I wanted to do the Mick Hucknall biopic, which is actually that was, we found the person that was Satan's upper body with human legs. He's called Mick Hucknall.
Rolling back the years. So all of that happens in the Elvis film and more.
Yeah.
It's quite the bits where he's singing are quite good because Elvis was good.
That always has to happen with every biopic.
Oh.
Everyone has to be saying, though, he's actually really good at singing and he's as good at singing as... He's not as good at singing as the actual singer!
Well, is that... That was my question. So is this the actor singing or is it...
No, not they use... I think they use Elvis audio.
Oh, yeah, do they?
Yeah. I think.
I mean, it turns out it's really good, is it, the Elvis singing Elvis?
Yeah. But yeah. The whole thing is torpedoed by an incredible acting choice by Tom Hanks.
Oh, yeah.
And the film stinks of... Nobody felt they could say anything to Tom Hanks.
Because he's
this.
Tom Hanks.
Yeah. Tom Hanks, yeah.
And it'll just be like, Tom's made a decision about his character and we're going to have to run with it. So essentially, I think they've given him a prosthetic to make him into a little fat man.
Okay.
How do you make a prosthetic that makes you smaller?
It's just very dense.
Does it have bits of the background painted in on the sides?
Well, there's just, he holds things that are big. So he holds like a big 20p all the time.
These 20p's haven't been enlarged. Do not make me give this normal size 20p to Tom Hanks. Do not make me have to do that.
So this is, presumably this is the scene where he's trying to use a phone in Prestwick Airport.
Exactly. Yeah.
They had to build a bigger Prestwick Airport, which was great for the people of Glasgow because it actually needed expanding.
It's still there, isn't it?
Still there.
So he's playing the character Colonel Tom Parker, who is Elvis's manager. And the kind of story of the film really is that he's a bit evil and is forcing Elvis to work so that he can pay off his own gambling debts, right? So that's the story of the film.
Sounds made up.
I think there's some truth in it, but it's a bit of a stretch, I think.
Okay.
He was Dutch in real life. He was Dutch. But I think in real life, he had lived in America for most of his life and had an American accent. Tom said, no.
That's the actor trap, Dutch. The Dutch accent is... That's ended careers, isn't it? That is the hardest...
It's a vicious snare.
It's such a vicious snare, the Dutch.
So what you end up with, basically, you've got prosthetic to be made into a little fat man, plus dodgy Dutch accent,
yeah,
leads you into, equals in this equation, Austin Powers villain. Elvish.
Oh, no.
It's a real...
Does he really go for it with the accent, does he?
He just leans in a bit too hard.
You're going to be bouncing all over the place, aren't you? Surely you're going to be bouncing into Danish, French, German, back into Dutch again.
It's impossible to do. I mean, that's why Mark Rylance has never played Geert Wilders.
Yet.
So my association with Elvis is that there's that is the moment where he's doing things with his legs, which is just a sort of unthinkable that no one has really done before or since. But one thing I have with Elvis is I'm sometimes a bit resistant. I'm like, oh, come on, it can't be that special. He can't be that great. But then when you do watch a bit of actual Elvis.
Oh, amazing.
Like, what he's doing with his legs is incredible. His voice is incredible. His eyes are the most beautiful jewels, well, the most beautiful things I've ever seen, his eyes.
Yeah.
I mean, he's the most beautiful man doing extraordinary things with his legs. And he's just great.
I would agree.
Yeah.
I would agree. Mike, what is your take on... I'm very pro-Elvis, I have to say.
Yeah, no,
on
Elvis
the real
is,
Elvis.
Elvis is amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, easy peasy, yeah. I think you've got to be made of stone not to enjoy some Elvis action, right? Whether it's the slow and smoochy or rock and rolly. I mean, it's there.
I'm just thinking what for other bands, in terms of biopics,
yeah,
what are those key moments? Because there's one key moment I know from David Bowie's career, which has there been a Bowie pick?
Yes, and I think it was a bit of a disaster.
That would be really hard to do, to pull off a Bowie pick.
Yeah, that would be tough.
It was snuck out a couple of years ago and didn't really make any waves. Yeah.
But there's a moment in Bowie, for example, in Bowie's life where he, when you look at your key beats, what you're going to have to get into the film, there's one where he sort of resigned from Ziggy Stardust on stage, live with the band, and they didn't know. He went, right, that's it, this is the last ever Ziggy.
That's it, this is the last ever Ziggy.
It's a bit Rory Stewart, isn't it, actually?
But he went, this is the last ever Ziggy Stardust gig, mail.
This is the last ever, the rest is politics.
Thanks, mate. Everybody can make a political difference.
Are there any good Beatles ones?
So there's a John Lennon one, isn't there, where he's played by four people, including women. So, or is that Bob Dylan? What's the one where, like...
Bob Dylan, I think that's Bob Dylan one.
Oh,
maybe.
Is it Bob Dylan, yeah.
There was quite a recent Lennon-y one, wasn't there, with... what's his chops who did that... oh, God. That superhero vigilante who isn't a superhero thing. Aaron.
Oh, my God. So, Mike, you're at a point pathetic, where... No, but I do this as well, where there are so many elements of that you haven't remembered what they are. So it's the person from the film about the person. I've forgotten who the film's about, but also I think it was a film. It might not have been. And
Nowhere Boy. Is that it?
Yeah. That was about young John Lennon.
Who am I thinking of? Aaron Johnson. And there was that backbeat one about the fifth Beatle.
You say recently, Mike, that was in 2009.
Oh, God.
That's sort of where I'm up to, though, I'd say, with cinematic releases.
Yeah.
You're going to love Argo.
Backbeat was unusual because that was the fifth Beatle, wasn't it? That was the kid who died and didn't make it. That was the different angle.
I see.
But maybe that was because it was slightly off the beaten track in terms of... how they do it. Who's getting a music biopic made of them? Who's active right now?
Oh, like Sheeran.
Is it Sheeran?
Is he?
Sting probably thinks he's due one, right?
I'm thinking more like in 30 Sting? Or 40 years' time, who's
going to get
one?
But right now, in terms of... Like, I mean, is Adele? I mean, who is the mega, 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 mega... Who warrants it? Who's exotic enough, really?
Jesse Plemons is Adele. In Chasing Pavements. I love Tottenham.
God damn it, this music career is taking its toll on my marriage, but maybe I can channel it into the lyrics of my next hit.
We're going to have to postpone the Vegas show. We're going to do a tearful video about it.
I'm just an East End girl.
I wonder whether they will make a Prince one.
Oh, Prince would be good.
Hard, though, because he's so sort of amazing
so
at everything.
So mercurial and elusive.
Yeah, who do you get to play him? I mean, obviously the answer is Jesse Plemons, but...
The answer is, yeah.
Or Rory Stewart. I think Rory Stewart can play Bowie. I think we've established that.
I think Prince would approve a really, like, completely out there. Don't even try and do an accurate representation.
Yes.
Just get Packer to do it. Just get Henry Packer to play.
Exactly.
With his normal accent, normal mannerisms, but playing Prince. And if there's any sort of big movie producers out there listening, that was a pitch right there.
DM us. I'd love it if Rory Stewart was playing Bowie. Because you know the way Rory Stewart and Alistair Campbell on the Rest is Politics podcast are quite competitive with each other about book sales.
How much swimming one of them does.
There's a little bit of friendly one-upmanship. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because whenever one of them tells the other one something, the other one always ups it. So if Rory Stewart was to tell Alistair Campbell that he was filming David Bowie.
Yeah.
He's a really fascinating artist and he had such a political influence on the 70s.
But he's the kind of posh guy as well who could easily say... See, another thing about posh people, like really posh people, is they've always got relatives that have done incredible things. Yeah, my uncle, of course, was David Bowie's drummer.
Yeah, just from a phase from when the uncle was living on a houseboat in Chelsea and just got involved in the scene for a little
exactly,
bit.
Yeah.
And now runs a grouse farm in Lanarkshire.
Before becoming the CEO of British American Tobacco.
I could see, out of one-upmanship, Alistair Campbell agreeing to play both of the Gallagher brothers.
The Oasis biopic.
There we go.
But I'm the front man, I'm what it's all about. Yeah, but you don't like the Linux, do you? That's, what, Linux? Fucking Wonderwall, it's not even a fucking thing. Get your fuck.
wonder whether he could do something clever and actually do a biopic of both the Gallagher brothers and Tony Blair and Gordon Brown in the 97 era brilliant. At the same time.
That's a key moment in the life
playing
of the band.
Playing all roles.
Playing all roles.
Well, he renders them as the same people. It's a very clever piece of satirical action.
But that's another great way to get an Oscar, is playing multiple parts in the same film.
Yeah.
So,
I can't think of anyone who's won an Oscar for doing that.
Oh, since when the fuck do we fucking care about that, mate? It's general chat, Ben. That's part of the fun. It's generalised chat, yeah? I'm essentially Tony Blair, yeah? I'm giving the people what they want. You're Gordon Brown on the detail there.
Yeah,
but you cannot win the 97 general election without my charm.
Do we know they've got WMDs? Are we sure about them?
Yeah. Doesn't...
It doesn't matter. Yeah. We're invading.
And maybe you will get your moment, Ben, but just think about Gordon Brown's premiership and how that went. That was what you're offering. Pure detail.
And then who's Mike? Nick Clegg.
Mike is Nick Clegg.
Just jimmying in about on the sidelines, just hoping for someone to give me a chance. Generally speaking, people are far more impressed by my wife.
Do you think Alistair Campbell was sitting in makeup, having his right eye glazed over to portray Gordon Brown?
Yeah.
For the scene.
Yeah.
Think at that point, you think, you know what, I may have pushed my one-upmanship relationship with Rory Stewart too far. I should have just let him have the Ziggy film.
When he's filming the scene where Tony Blair is playing Nebworth for some reason. This doesn't make sense, does it?
I've got the roles mixed up. This is the trouble with my intimidating persona. The script people just refuse to challenge me on anything. Hello, Nebworth.
He's going to think that until he hears that... that Rory's decided he's going to do a biopic of Gaddafi during his teen band years. It's a biopic off.
It's a biopic off, isn't it? A more and more outlandish musical biopic. Until Rory Stewart's playing the whole of the Polyphonic Spree.
So I think we'll catch a bit of flack for being Restless Politics listeners, I think. Probably
really?
Quite rightly. Yeah.
Why is that?
Well, people just think they're just kind of these smug centrist dads, essentially, not really adding anything to the world, just kind of smugging their way through.
Okay,
it's a bit like ourselves.
Yeah.
There's a new one coming out soon, which is the George Osborne Ed Balls podcast.
Oh, yeah.
And I can't see that one working at all.
No.
I just think it feels too contrived, doesn't it? I mean, do Ed Balls and George Osborne really like hang out?
It feels contrived, and
chat?
And also aren't they both sort of reasonably loathsome individuals?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Is it the sort of dark shadow of the rest of politics?
Yeah, they've basically seen that happening and thought, I want a bit of that.
Sort of evil version.
Because the rest of his politics play like the Royal Albert Hall.
It's mad, isn't it?
Hasn't George Osborne got enough jobs as it is?
He was at the time doing everything. I think he's stopped doing all of the jobs now.
Okay.
He was the editor of the Evening Standard, and he was in charge of a charity. And
the British Museum.
Oh, that's right, yes. I think he still is the chairman of the British Museum.
Which hasn't been going well, has it?
Has it not?
Well, the item's been going missing.
Really? I didn't know about this.
This is all over the news.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
Heaps of items have been going missing from the back storage rooms and being sold on eBay to various collectors and...
Oh, wow.
Antique
So not stuff that's on display?
No, it's all the stuff in the back.
Did it not strike you as weird that Mike's been wearing that Tutankhamun headpiece for the last couple of records?
And broadcasting from prison.
But they let you keep it.
You can't take it off once you put it on. It seals itself onto your scalp.
Or you release the curse of the gimlet cat eyes.
Yeah, all sorts of canoodling going on. A couple of job losses. I don't think anyone's been prosecuted yet, have they?
So do they know who it was?
I think they do. I think that person has been sacked, or persons have been sacked.
It's a bit like when I worked as a receptionist at the head office of B&Q.
Mm-hmm. You're a bit light-fingered with the display spanners, were you?
No, I wasn't going to go near them, Mike. They had the full lasers and everything around them. You know? But I did a couple of, let's put it this way, a ream of batteries went missing under my watch.
A ream?
Well, a tranche. a tranche of battery, so
a suitcase.
No, just a kind of a length of it's just you know, if you're ordering batteries at a delicatessen, you say one length of Duracells, please. So a sort of length of Duracells went missing, and and what I did was basically I thought that this was going to impress my dad. I was living at home at the time. I was in my early 30s.
This is in lieu of rent. An Asda bag full of AAA batteries.
My dad had mentioned that he needed some batteries. And I thought, this is good. And I came back one day and gave him, and just left them on the table. And was like, don't worry about it. And I thought he'd be quite impressed and pleased that, you know, my son's doing all right. And he basically said, did you steal these batteries? And I said, I said, yes, of course I did. They're not in the packaging you get in a shop there. These are clearly, this is a bulk buy from a major corporation.
Yeah, that 9 volts got a bit of egg on it. So it might be a used one, because I did find it in a bin. So I don't know if it's used or not, but I haven't tried it. If you shake it a bit, it might
probably be right.
Might get something out of it.
And it also explains the phalanx of security guards banging on the front door. They'll probably stop, hopefully.
And the sniffer humans that have been sniffing around all day. But then he was quite annoyed with me that I'd stolen batteries just because he's anti-theft, turns out.
Right, different generation, isn't it?
Different generation. To me, it was when you... I'm just thinking in terms of the British Museum. For me, you know, if they're just there...
You just said British Museum in a very Rory Stewart way.
British Museum.
My uncle actually founded the British Museum. Yeah, similar sort of thing, which is if they're lying around, you know, eventually they just might go walkies. If you're working there as a young man, and maybe your father says that he hasn't got any earthenware, and he's
Etruscan pottery.
He's low on Etruscan spoons. Then maybe a couple of them go missing, go walkies. But when I stole those batteries from B&Q head office, I felt that was a crime with no victim. But is there always a victim somewhere?
Well, the your employer was
victim. But they're a huge multinational drill maker.
who would have it been pinned on, though, the battery theft?
Oh, well, obviously there was they executed 10 staff the next morning. But that's how they do things at B&Q. They execute 10 people.
With their drill.
With the mega drill.
The wheel of bless them has soul.
Lovely, lovely blue eyes. Oh, have you ever been to Graceland?
No, I'd like to.
Never. I'd be bang up for it, though. It's another spot for a live show, isn't it?
Yeah. Hey, guess what? I saw that there was a comedian doing a gig at the Crab Museum in...
Ring the bell.
In Margate?
Margate.
Yeah. I've been to that Crab Museum. Yeah. We talked about it. Yeah, I've got a T-shirt from it.
Just feels like a place we should do a live show.
This isn't it.
Is it?
Crab Museum, Graceland.
Albert Hall. Do you think... Could we fill old Albert?
No.
Nope. We might.
How many...
Get a decent attendance at the Crab Museum in Margate, though. With the right marketing.
Well, actually, a couple of the larger crabs were seen sidling out after 40 minutes. One star, the Crab Gazette. how many people does it take to fill darling old Albert?
It's got to be more than 1,000, isn't it? I reckon a couple of thousand. I'm going to say 3,000, my guess.
What's your guess, Henry?
Maybe 5,000.
5,272.
Oof. Good grief.
I didn't think we could fill old Albert, you know.
Where's the doubt?
The way I see it is 300 people like to come to our live shows.
Yeah.
At the...
And whether it's in Machynlleth or London, they are the same 300
people. They are the same. Because I was thinking whether we could ask them to store it up and all come at once at darling old Albert in about 10 years' time. And then at least we'd have to say we've... But if you're right, if it is the same 300 people, which I think it is...
If we can convince those 300 people to bring perhaps 18 friends each...
Yeah.
Then maybe.
Yeah, it's a bit of a stretch, isn't it?
We'll give them all a plus 18.
And maybe if we build it as Eric Clapton Live?
Oh, that's not a bad shout.
That's it. See, that's what I mean. That's the marketing right there.
And if we can point out, for legal reasons, if there's a tiny A next to the big A, we can say, actually, it wasn't Eric Clapton, it was Eric Clapton There's a tiny A next to the big A. Legally, you cannot touch us. Because Mike's stage name, we've decided, is Eric Clapton. He goes on stage and plays his guitar and
plays Wonderful Tonight.
plays Wonderful Tonight on his guitar.
Backing track.
Yeah.
It's late in the evening.
I'm wondering which clothes to wear.
No, she's wondering which clothes to wear.
So I put on my makeup. No, so she puts on her makeup. It's a bit creepy, isn't it?
You've completely misunderstood the song.
And does something with her long blonde hair.
Shaves off?
Shaves off. It's a bit creepy, that song, isn't it? And then I tell her that she turns out the light. I said, my darling, you were wonderful tonight.
Elvis. Okay, in this final bit, this was from the Pencils episode we recorded, but as you'll hear, it is before we even turned on the bean machine. It's before we even started the podcast, really.
Yes, there should be a trigger warning, really, with this.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's a Pompidou, presumably, is it?
It's one of the biggest and most complete Pompidous they'll ever get.
Yeah. So if you find the idea of that unbearable, early bath for you, I'd say.
And now it's time for Pompidou section. Pompidou.
It's the sound of us all negotiating some new software, basically.
Yeah.
It's the nearest thing to actually visiting the Pompidou Centre you can do outside of Paris, isn't it? Probably. I mean, you could almost make it into an audio tour for people going around the actual Pompidou Centre in Paris to help them understand it more.
I think I've listened back to this section. I think Mike comes out of it very well, and then Henry comes out of it as someone who can't really get to grips with technology in the way he needs to.
Mm. Yeah.
I can't have it very badly because I start getting very angry at Henry for no good reason, really.
I think particularly these listeners will understand that you are at your wit's end. And I think they'll have a lot of empathy with you, Ben. So I shouldn't worry about that too much. I think it's more likely that they will direct their ire with you towards Henry.
Yeah. But I think it's what we always do, isn't it, in the podcast, which is we represent the classic archetypical characters, which is Mike is the kind king, the good king. Mm. Ben is the...
The lascivious knave?
or the angry git.
And you are the dead jester.
Yeah.
Turning on the spit.
Yeah. Poignant because he's funny, because he's a jester, but also there's a poignancy because he's long dead. He's
but the turning of the spit means that his little jingle bells on the end of his hat are still jingling as he goes around.
Yeah. As the lascivious, git slash knave, you're turning the spit, are you?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
What the fuck is this good kingdom? It's happening in your kingdom, Mike. You're allowing this to happen.
The king ordered this to happen.
I'm not sure if the king is as good as.
But this would have been a time when this would have been felt to be a benevolent act. It's crazy good, you know. Yeah.
And of course, the village children are just loving it, aren't they? They're all...
Yeah, exactly. This is great stuff. This is, you know...
Yeah.
This is going to keep them in chat fuel for weeks.
So, this new... We're recording it in a new way, right?
We're using new software,
We're using new software.
Yeah.
One of the things which happens with the new software is it does a sort of countdown to launch.
Yeah.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1 on the screen. It feels like the software thinks we're doing something slightly more important or more sort of professional than we are.
The countdown suggests that you'll be ready at the end of the countdown, doesn't it, crucially?
Yeah. Well, it implies that you probably should have been ready before. As well. You should have roughly had your chickens in a row.
Your ducks in a box. Your foxes in a crate.
You should have at least had your metaphors sort of vaguely strapped to your thigh. you know, so they're accessible, so you can whip them out and they'd be the right ones.
Henry.
Hi.
We're not even hearing you through the correct microphone.
Oh, come on, mate. Are you serious?
Yeah, we're hearing you through your laptop microphone.
Are you serious?
Rather than your creamy voiceover microphone.
Hang on. How's that? Is that creamy?
No. It's still just sort of weakly milky at the moment, I'd say.
No, you need to change it on screen thing.
By the way, you stick some banjo music on this. It's a great sort of, oh, we're having tech problems sort of montage, isn't it?
I bought a banjo last week.
No.
just for this kind of occurrence?
Yeah. But I'm not very good. Because so what we'll have is the sound of a man learning the banjo over tech problems, which is the worst possible.
Banjo okay. problems plus tech problems. There's too many problems.
Well, we need another banjo track to go with your hapless attempts to play banjo. We'd need it, wouldn't we?
Are you trying to right the wrongs of my banjo ignorance?
Well, I was aware, Mike, that you at some stage bought a banjo and never learned to play it very well.
A long time ago, yeah.
I think we're all blundering into the same middle-aged kind of mistakes. And I just felt like I'm helpless to stop it. I just had to...
Lurching into hobby after hobby, desperately exactly. seeking relevance and meaning.
Whoa, whoa, whoa.
And a way to wow people at the end of that dinner party. It's never going to happen.
Excuse me. Some of you guys might be making classic middle-aged mistakes, but don't think you can accuse me of that, thanks. I've just paid up for four sessions with a personal trainer, so someone's not... yeah? So, someone...
Henry, sort out your microphone. What are you doing?
You see, this is the equivalent of having a NASA countdown launch, and then we're just sat in the rocket.
Someone's forgotten their sandwiches.
One of us hasn't brought his banjo, and it's just like, what the fuck is this? It's ridiculous.
One of us is naked from the waist down because it's too hot again.
The other one's naked from half of the way down his body left because of the new way that they do.
You're even talking into the microphone, which isn't turned on, as if talking into it will help.
The tragedy here as well is that Houston is just one man. Poor Ben is just the whole of... NASA at least have 2,000 people working at the same time.
He's going to have to try... Well, if we actually do finally get this thing off the ground, he's going to have to try and French kiss himself and then take himself to an industrial tribunal. That's the way that was an appropriate way to celebrate the launch.
I'm both Houston Ground Control and Michael Collins, not the Irish Revolutionary.
Oh, God. But I'm starting to feel a bit giddy.
Just turn the right microphone on. What's going on?
What you're saying is me talking into this mic is essentially someone... I'm scratching a phantom limb. Is that what you're saying?
What? You farted in the Apollo 12, whatever it is.
Yeah, not in just not just into the spacesuit, but the whole ship.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. So, all right. So, if I go into the microphone settings,
this is exactly why we haven't had any awards.
Also, we haven't. I have meant to try and submit us to awards, but I never got around to it. There's also that as well.
You're always too snowed under with dealing with tech problems coming from me to actually get around to submitting, to applying for the awards. I mean, and they're begging for it, aren't they? They're begging for us to apply. The awards, they're sitting there. They're waiting for us, those awards. Hang on. You can turn off the camera while recording, but you can't switch cameras.
Oh, my God. So
no.
It's not the camera, mate. It's the mic.
Ben, I'm in the mic section. All I've got is Scarlett Solar USB is greyed out.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
It's greyed out.
Do we need to stop the recording and start again to try and change it?
I think we're looking at an $18 billion launch postponement, aren't we?
entire careers have been wasted on preparing for this launch.
Yeah.
Mommy, you said Daddy was going to the moon.
Daddy will be home for tea tonight.
Once he's been decontaminated.
And stripped of his pension. Okay, how's that?
Well, it's the same.
Exactly the same, no change.
Yeah.
It was better from my point of view. So, okay.
There's okay, just to explain to the listener who may well have turned off by now, Henry seems to be sort of unplugging things, yeah, moving bits of... It's literally, he just needs to click on the thing on the screen.
It's all off screen, though, as well. What was that? I think he's making a Lego Millennium Falcon.
What?
We can't see what you're doing off screen with your hands. It looks like you're doing a lot.
I've been told it's a good way of helping me relax. Unfortunately, I've made it in such a way that the bit with which they hide in underneath the flooring, that's actually on the outside of the ship, so I'm going to have to I'm looking at having to rejig the whole thing. And there's a French 12-year-old that I pay to help me with my Lego work, who...
Henry, I'm genuinely annoyed now. I can't enjoy a sort of whimsical monologue about a 12-year-old. Sorry.
Can you push the big red button then, Ben?
There's a button that says remove, and I could just remove Henry from the call.
Ooh.
Henry's now chosen the option no microphone.
So I've tried to do the old on and off trick. Ben, my Scarlett Solar USB is greyed out in the options.
I don't know why that would be.
And I think it might be a cable connection issue. Is that what's happening?
No, it's not a cable connection issue.
Okay, let's tell you what's going on in GarageBand.
That sounds even worse. How have you managed that? You're not even using your computer's mic now. Which mic are you using? I think you're using a microphone that Mossad have left in the walls of your flat 30 years ago.
Mossad agents have been called out of retirement now all over the world.
It's gone live.
It's finally happening. Black November has arrived. But in September. Okay.
I think we'll have to sort of stop and start again, I think, is the only way to do this.
Whoa. Oh, my God. I think I'm shivering my head. Hang on. See, our software gave us a countdown to this. I mean, I really have made my point, haven't I? In a way. It was a point, though, to deal with incompetence, unfortunately. Those are often the points that I really make quite well and hard. Okay, hang on.
Can I just say very earnestly that I'm seething.
No, that is coming across.
Henry is unravelling before our very eyes. Ever cool in a crisis, Henry has to think at first principles.
Oh, God. What happens in these situations is mentally I boil down to almost to nothing, just a couple of words, like hinge, forwards, grey. Yeah,
there might as well be a squid on a desk at the moment, I think.
Basically. Yeah. I'm sort of going back, evolutionarily speaking, from an evolutionary point of view, I'm sort of going back through the brain state. So I'm currently at squid.
In about 5 minutes, you'll just be some sulfur.
Yeah. <That's it.
laughs> On the surface of a comet.
I'm already starting to feel, a sort of non-atmosphered celestial body. And a sort of violent wind, just a violent, never-ending wind that goes round and round that comet. Just a howl. Basically, what I'm doing, I'm searching for a framework within which to think about this problem.
Oh, God.
So,
what are you thinking? Literary criticism? Political analysis? What's the framework you're going for?
I think just sort of
calculus.
Just sulfur dynamics.
So, can I make a suggestion? Yeah.
Okay. Please.
Why don't you fuck yourself, first of all? And then secondly...
Do you want me to go and fuck myself? Because
no, just do it here.
Stay. It's a stay fuck yourself. It's fuck yourself in front of everyone. It's the worst fuck yourself.
Which is far harsher, frankly.
It's really harsh. It's not been seen since Victoria, the worst Scottish boarding schools in the 19th century.
It's too offensive to put on T-shirts, isn't it? You don't see a stay and fuck yourself T-shirt because it's too rude.
Hey, buddy, stay and fuck yourself.
Oh. okay.
I think probably you might need to just turn off GarageBand.
Okay.
And then not run a backup potentially.
Not run a backup.
Because it seems to be okay until you turned on GarageBand.
So this is all a bit like that bit at the end of Apollo 13, isn't it? We're having to try something. You're still being one man NASA.
I'm Tom Hanks. No, you're Tom Hanks.
I'm Tom Hanks, and you're having to say things like, "Turn off GarageBand. We're going to have to do this without backup." Whatever. it's quite tense. I'm going to save. Oh, by the way. Here's a little insight.
Yeah, is it time for a by the way? Is it time for a by the way? Henry, just have a think.
I should only be thinking about the way at the moment, shouldn't I? anything to the left and right of the way is completely it's irrelevant. No, quick insight into how I kind of thinking in these kind of situations. I'll do something like, for example, I'm going to close GarageBand. I'm going to save as, I don't know what to call it, I don't know where to put it. So it's going to go desktop. I'm going to call it something which puts it at the top of the alphabetical list if I have to find it. So I'm going to call it. But it's got quite a few other things in there on my desktop, though. There's quite a few as. But normally I'll put more A's. I'm going to put loads and loads of A's. This is about 15 A's. Dot band. That's going on the desktop. Hang on. Where's my fucking. Okay. Phew. All right. Closing GarageBand. Okay, good.
He's gone silent. I don't think he intends to be silent.
Houston? So I was saying Houston and I wasn't hearing anything back. It's like I've gone around the dark side of the moon there. All right, I'm back. Ben?
Houston, we have a dickhead. You're gonna have to leave, fuck yourself, and then come back.
Leave the software.
Yeah, I'm going to stop the recording. And
We'll start with the software, and we'll think about the podcast later.
We're recording.
Hello.
Here we go.
Yeah, we're back. We're good.
Yes,
we're A-OK, people. We brought that bird down. The crow's coming home.
The eagle has been shot.
The eagle will not trouble us again.
Did Daddy go to the moon? Don't worry, son. Statistically, he'll probably come back. Has anyone died in space recently?
Ooh. No, I don't know. It feels like it's got to be one of those things that's... Everyone says flying is the safest form of travel, but maybe getting a space shuttle is the safest form of travel.
It's actually the safest form of... Is that actually the safest way to get around?
Hmm.
So the safest way to go to Spain for your holiday would be via the moon?
Yeah.
In theory.
With a stopover in the International Space Station.
Okay, that was Extra Beans. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
For patroning and listening. And see you soon.
Cheerio.